first, a few admissions. I'm not Microsoft, so I'm not here to sell you guys anything. I'm also not traditionally a Windows developer, so while I'll be talking a little bit about Windows development, that's not really my main thrust. I'm an interactive developer. I focus on the web mostly. And so I'm going to talk about what I know. So I'm going to talk a lot about HTML5 and kind of the direction that I see the web and JavaScript and HTML going in, and some of the things that, you know, myself and my company have kind of learned working inside of this space. I am, though, excited to talk about some of the opportunities that Windows 8 presents to me and my company, coming from that background, coming from the background of being web developers. So this is going to work. There we go. All right, I just need to make sure I can trust this thing. So I want to title this talk, HTML5, Ready or Not. And there's a couple of reasons for this, and a couple of ways that we can look at this title. The first is HTML5 ready or not? This is a question that's been in the media a lot lately. We've seen comments from people like Mark Zuckerberg talking about his experiences with HTML5. And that's really got people asking, like, is this technology ready for prime time? We could also look at this title as, are you ready or not for HTML5? And, I think that's a valid question right now. There's a lot of things to learn to work with this technology. But I think the sort of subtitle here is, regardless of whether HTML5 is actually ready, regardless of whether or not we're ready for it, it's here. It's, you know, being broadly adopted. It's being pushed on us. We have to start to work with it. I think this is a really exciting time to be a technologist. We're in this huge renaissance, right? It can only really be described as a renaissance, or at least a web renaissance. We're seeing a huge amount of interest in the open web, web standards. We're seeing a huge rate of change. Things are changing really quickly. And we're seeing all kinds of new opportunity open up. I really think that, I've been working in web technologies for about 15 years, and I've never seen a rate of change as quick as what we're seeing today. As some sort of evidence, and I should point out, this is also the first time I've ever presented with PowerPoint, so I'm going to, like, throw all kinds of stupid effects at you guys. When you're learning something new, always just, kind of, like, mess with it until you know how it works. But so as an example, and some of them I'm really proud of, so when you see me stop to, like, admire something going on, it's because I really like my effect. So as evidence of this, there's this great site, evolutionoftheweb.com, that sort of lays out some of the history of HTML technology. And if we look at the 10 years leading up to 2008, it's not really a whole lot going on, right? We see the introduction of a couple of new browsers. There's a couple of devices, a few new specs that really didn't see a lot of use for the most part. But when we look at the last 5 years, the time since 2007, 2008, things have just exploded, right? We've seen all kinds of new things that we need to learn. We've really gone from stagnation to just explosive growth. One thing that we've seen is whole new device classes, at least from a web perspective. Suddenly, people are browsing with their phone. They're browsing with their phone more than browsing with the desktop. We're seeing things like tablets. We're seeing TV, web-enabled TV. We're also seeing new interactions. People are working on the web using touch. They're working on the web using remote controls. And so we have to learn how to accommodate these things. And this is a huge change from when I started in this industry. You know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, my biggest hardware worry was, when can we finally start supporting 1024 by 768 as default, right? And I spent 3 years worrying about that. And now, like, every 2 weeks, there's something new new on the hardware front that I have to be concerned about. And I think that's awesome. It's challenging, but it's also really awesome. We've seen a whole bunch of new browsers. And we've seen a lot of new software. We've seen, Chrome has come out. Safari has come out. We saw Netscape die off. Firefox supplant it. We saw IE9 come out, which is significant because it was the first version of IE that didn't totally suck. sorry, Microsoft, but they knew it's true, right? And that's one of the nice things about the new Microsoft is that they are very willing to admit to that. We've also seen new platforms that are building on and extending the browser. We're seeing things like Chrome OS, Web OS, which maybe was kind of a failed experiment, and Windows 8, which brings HTML5 and the web stack in as a native way of building applications. In terms of web standards, hundreds of new APIs. It's like basically impossible to stay up to date with all of the new specs and all of the new standards that are being introduced in the web world today. You kind of have to pick and choose what's interesting to you and follow them and get involved with them. But it's just this incredible explosion of innovation where all of these different new participants are working together to try and make the web better. It doesn't necessarily mean they agree on how to make it better, but they're all working together to make it better. We've seen thousands of new open source libraries, whether they're filling gaps in problems that still exist, or whether they're building on top of new capabilities and exposing us to it and making it easier to work with these things. And of course, we've seen tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of new participants. And this is both on the sort of megacorp side, you know, the Microsofts and Apples and Adobes of the world, and also individuals, you know, people like you guys and people like me who are working with this technology, providing feedback, building open source, and contributing in our own ways. So with that in mind, let me take a little while to just introduce myself and introduce kind of my history and my company's history when working with the web. So I'm Grant Skinner. You know that now. I run a company called G Skinner, which is not a very exciting or innovative name. And basically what we do is we focus on the cutting edge of interactive. We work with clients like Microsoft, Google, Facebook, largely big tech companies, and we basically try and figure out how to leverage the very edge of interactive technology, right? The latest APIs, the latest browsers, and it's fun, but it's also extraordinarily challenging in a lot of ways. Traditionally, to work on the cutting edge of interactive and be able to build really interesting experiences online, we worked with Flash. Just so you know, my brand of humor is really kind of lame. I like things like flashes and flexes and errors. Oh my. So we did a lot of Flash work. We worked with Flash for about 10 years. We built all kinds of different experiences for lots of large companies, and we had a lot of fun with it. It was a great technology to work with. However, a lot of the capability that Flash had is now being exposed in the open web. And we're seeing the open web being like very strongly embraced by everywhere. We still do some Flash work, but nowadays we're mostly doing HTML5. Most of our focus is there. And part of the reason for that is that as much as I love Flash, a couple of years ago I asked myself the question, when new technology comes out, new hardware platforms come out, are they going to support Flash? And the answer to that was a resounding maybe. And when I look at HTML5 and the web technology stack, I can ask that same question and be absolutely positive that any new technology platforms are going to try and support HTML5 to the best of their ability. So how did we get into this? How did we switch from Flash to, well, not switch, but move into HTML5 in addition to Flash? Well, it was actually Microsoft's fault. Almost 3 years ago, Microsoft approached us and they said, hey, we know your Flash work, we really like it, we'd be really excited to see what you guys can do using HTML5 and what you could build on top of the IE9 browser that's going to be coming out shortly. And specifically, we'd like to see if it's possible to build a real casual game inside of the web stack. And so we said, well, I guess Microsoft has money. Maybe we can do that. But honestly, our previous go at web technologies, open web technologies, had almost resulted in one of my senior devs quitting. We did this media search in HTML about 5 years ago, and it was such a mess trying to get every browser to work that when we finished the project, My senior dev told me that if I ever made him work on an HTML project again, he would quit. So things have come a long way. So Pirates Love Daisies, I'm not going to go too far into this because we have limited time. But totally web deployed. It runs entirely on the web standard stack. It includes audio, graphics using Canvas, things like local storage. And, you know, it's just a fairly straightforward tower game.
Reporting for Disney.
Or tower defense game. So not necessarily the most innovative game on its own, but it really showed at the time where the web was going, what kind of new experiences were going to be possible using HTML. So I'm gonna get out of this. Oh man, this is gonna just yell at me. So this kind of sucked us in. Once we had built one of these experiences and realized this isn't actually too bad, we went really gung-ho, and we started to build out a lot of these experiences. So we built out some additional games, some kind of rich interactive pieces like Technotone, and we started to learn a lot about this technology, right? We learned how to work with it, and we also learned that we weren't starting from scratch. Once you know a lot about interactive development and the sort of philosophies and metaphors that go into building great interactive experiences, it's very easy to port it to other languages and other technology stacks. So really, we were just learning JavaScript and how to work with HTML, some new APIs, but we had this huge advantage in that we knew how to work with animation, and we knew how to work with user interaction, and we knew how to make great experiences. And we found that it was really easy to bring those lessons over into the web world from the Flash world, and that picking up the technology itself was pretty straightforward. And we started to look for ways that we could empower other people to build these types of experiences. So not just doing commercial work, but also doing open source work. And over the last few years, actually as part of Pirates, we started to work on a library called EaselJS. And we've been working on that ever since, and we've added other libraries to it. And we've released this suite of open source libraries called CreateJS that let you build things like games and data visualization, you know, rich experiences inside of HTML. Sponsored by Adobe and Microsoft. And I'll bet you're dying to know what's inside that box, right? That's right? Yeah, yeah, all right. I told you I don't have a very good sense of humor. So So we have four libraries right now inside of the CreateJS box. We have EaselJS, which is a library for doing 2D graphics, primarily on top of Canvas, but it'll actually, we actually have experimental renderers that'll let you render content out to the DOM, to SVG, to WebGL, and Canvas, of course. This basically gives you a display list, an interactive layer, and it makes it really easy to build, you know, games and that type of content. We released SoundJS. Sound on the web right now is a really big challenge, and we're trying to make it easier. So we're not trying to make it easy, but we're trying to make it easier. So we abstract a lot of the difficulty in doing sound out and give you a really easy API to work with. TweenJS gives you an animation library that works with EaselJS or works with whatever else you want. And finally, PreloadJS. You know, one of the easily overlooked parts of building any great experience is actually getting your assets in there and providing progress bars and things like that. And so we made that really easy. And each of these libraries can be used independently or they can be used together to take advantage of each other's capabilities. If you'd like to learn more about CreateJS, I'm actually doing a talk later on. It's in the gaming track and that's at 2:30, so feel free to drop by. I like to call the gaming track the fun track. All the cool kids are going to be there. Who else is a gaming track speaker? Yeah. All right. So we dove into HTML. You know, Microsoft, Steve Jobs said, drink the Kool-Aid. And we did. And it was OK. When we started, it wasn't great. It was OK. There were still a lot of challenges. There's a lot of problems with browsers 3 years ago, a lot of inconsistencies, and a lot of stuff that we really had to learn. But you know, that's enough about me for now. Let's jump back. Let's talk about HTML5 a little bit more. So again, you know, when we started this, HTML5 was okay, but it's been getting better. For one thing, it's evolving. We're adding all of these new APIs, right? We're getting new weapons. So things like geolocation, microdata, touch, one of my favorite APIs, Canvas, another one I love. We're getting increasingly good support for audio and video. Things like sockets, which let us do multiplayer, multi-user experiences. All of this stuff is coming or is already here, and it's really making it so that we can build cool stuff. And there's all kinds of stuff that's not even on this list. I mean, we have things like orientation lock and mouse lock, CSS filters, shaders. There's just a never-ending parade of new APIs and capabilities that we can take advantage of. We're also seeing the stack mature, and this is in a lot of different ways. API availability, right? So, you know, more and more browsers are supporting more and more of these features. Consistency, right? The ability to write your code once and maybe actually have it work across all of the browsers that you're targeting. I mean, that's still kind of a lottery, but it's getting better. Performance has increased immensely over the last 3 years. In fact, you look at the Pirates Love Daisies game that we built 3 years ago, that game was specifically designed to tax the top-end desktop systems at the time. We wanted to show off that IE9 had hardware acceleration for graphics, and we pushed those graphics as far as we could on hardware at that time, and on browsers at that time. Today, that game will run on an iPad or an iPhone. To me, that's incredible that you know, the mobile device can run something that just a couple of years ago we built specifically to bring a desktop system to its knees. So performance has gotten way better, both on the graphical front and on the code front. And of course, tools, which you know traditionally have been a real problem, but we browsers are coming up with better dev tools, and companies like Adobe and Microsoft and even little guys like my own team are coming up with tools to make things easier. And the other big area of innovation is open source, right? I mean, making web development bearable. I would hate to do web development without open source projects. They fill in all the gaps, they smooth things over across browsers, and they just make things so much easier to work with. I mean, these are some of the common ones that my team uses all over the place. So all of these things are sort of coming together, and they're enabling experiences that even 5 years ago we wouldn't have even thought was possible using web technology. An example of this is a project that we launched with Microsoft and Atari a little earlier this year called Atari Arcade. And I'll show you this briefly. So again, this is all web technology, no Flash, nothing like that. We're taking advantage of things like CSS 3D for the interactions. And we can jump in and play games. Games are all built on top of Create.js. Play this. This is pretty much the rest of the keynote. So we're able to build these experiences that you just would not have thought was possible 5 years ago. I mean, it's still not, you know, cutting edge for a desktop game, but it's amazing that we can deploy this thing on top of pretty much every single modern browser and have it work and have it be performant. The other thing that's really cool that's happening in this space is the ubiquity of HTML5, right? Traditionally, we've only been able to deploy HTML content on the web, right? I mean, this is the internet in a nutshell. I went out and I found like some of those graphics of like beams of light encircling the globe, and I was like, eh, that's not really the internet to me, but three keyboard cat, that's the internet. So, you know, we can take this content, we can stick it on the web. Of course, we can stick it on mobile phones, right? I mean, all of the new, we've gone from smartphones to superphones. I'm not quite sure what comes after that, ultra megaphones. But we can stick them onto our superphones. Obviously, the desktop. And not just viewing this content in a browser on these devices. I'm talking about, you know, wrapping this content as a native app, or actually having it supported directly as a native application, as in, you know, Windows 8. And another space that I think is really exciting is that we're starting to see HTML5 utilized in embedded markets, right? Projects like Intel's Tizen, which is basically targeted at, you know, things like car dashboards. Being able to use HTML5 is this universal UI layer. And of course, in kind of more unorthodox places, you guys can actually go out and play this. This is in the Xbox room, I guess. So as part of the Atari arcade, Microsoft actually built arcade cabinets that play these games. And to me, that's kind of interesting. It makes us really rethink how we do interaction on the web. Of course, with the Atari arcade, we also supported tablets. So we had to integrate touch, right? So we have to start thinking about these different interactions when we're building this content. So we can play them on tablets. And more recently, we added a mobile experience for Atari Arcade. And this, we really had to rethink the whole experience, not just the games themselves, but the actual site, trying to make that really friendly to touch and small screens. So we're really starting to drive towards app-like experiences using this technology. And that kind of raises the question, which has been on everyone's minds, what about apps versus HTML, right? We're seeing statements like this, right? So September 11th of this year, Mark Zuckerberg said HTML5 was the biggest strategic mistake that we made. And this got a lot of people talking and saying, HTML5 isn't ready, you know, no one should be using it, it's a big mistake. And I was like, ah, Mark, he's so rich and so smug. And now he's talking can I say bad words? Now he's talking shit about my technology. Bastard! That's one of those effects I was proud of, just by the way. But that's not all he said. That's what the media focused on. But he also said, we have more people using mobile web Facebook than our iOS or Android apps combined. Right? So maybe he doesn't need the mustache. Maybe he's an okay guy. Maybe he's not talking smack about HTML5 right now. And maybe what this means is that we can't just have apps. Maybe we need to have apps and HTML, right? So maybe we still need the apps, but we also need to have a web presence, because more people are looking at Facebook on the web on their mobile devices than using the apps that Facebook has put out. And that tells us something. But he didn't stop there. He also said, it's not that HTML5 is bad, I'm actually long-term really excited about it. So, all right, Mark, maybe we're good. Maybe things are all right. And I can't really pick on him, right? I mean, Mark's a smart guy. Facebook is actually a client, so he writes checks for us. I mean, not him personally, but I probably shouldn't make too much fun of him. But it's pretty obvious that he's not anti-HTML5, right? All he's doing is he's looking at the requirements that Facebook has right now and saying HTML5 to build native apps isn't working for Facebook, right? And it might be shocking to some people, especially members of the media, but Facebook has 600 engineers. They have $4 billion in revenue. Their entire business is based on giving people the best possible experience in their environment to access Facebook content. So their priorities might be a little bit different than our clients or our own priorities. They might have slightly different resources to address those priorities, too. I don't know how many of you have 600 dedicated engineers to build your client-side technologies, but I don't. So maybe we can even look at apps with HTML, right? A lot of companies, we have limited resources. We don't need a best-of-breed application on every single client. We might already have existing web technologies or web content that we can repurpose. So we can look at the advantages that HTML5 brings as a way of building apps and building our web platforms. And we can look at the resources that we have, and we can decide, does it make sense for us? Or does it make sense to spend the money to build a native iOS application as well as the website, and maybe build a native Android application as well, or build a Windows Phone 8 app as well? So it's really a decision. It's not as clear-cut as, well, HTML5 isn't ready. It has benefits and drawbacks. There are certain things that HTML is great at, right? I think the two things on this list that that are most important is responsive layouts. One of the big challenges of building applications these days is dealing with all of these different screen resolutions, right? And the native platforms don't do a really great job of addressing this. It's really hard to target Android using Android development tools and make it support every screen resolution. It takes a lot of work to get that to work. And HTML has always been based, and especially more recently, has been based around building content that displays well at different screen resolutions. So we can leverage that to create content that's going to work cross-device. And while HTML definitely does not work perfectly cross-browser, cross-device, you're still going to have to do some debugging on every platform. It's still a whole lot less work once you get it working in one platform to take it to another than it is to build from scratch, right? To build a whole new application from the ground up to address another platform. HTML is also getting better at other types of experiences, you know, things like games, media, you know, video apps, 3D, these types of things. And this is really what a lot of my company's focus has been on. Whereas native apps, of course, still have a lot of advantages, right? You're not going to build an HTML5 app that feels completely native. There's going to be UI differences, whether visually or just in the feel, you know, how the touch responds. You're not going to have quite the same level of agility in terms of being able to target new APIs, you know, when new versions of the phone OS comes out. And you're never going to get the same performance as native. And that's just a given, right? We're farther away from the metal. We also have things like, you know, consistency, code security, device access, so access to like APIs that aren't exposed by the web stack, and monetization. All of these things are more difficult if we're running inside of a browser. They're not necessarily more difficult, though, if we're building an app using HTML, but deploying it using a wrapper or going native. I have a sad face here, but I don't think that's true. I think, you know, really, this is a good thing, right? We have options, and as developers, that's a fantastic thing, right? So if we want to build an app using HTML, what do we do? Well, we have maybe three ways that we can approach it. One is a cross-compiler. This is just kind of a brand new emerging thing. Things like Ejecta. In fact, someone is working on a Ejecta port for CrateJS, where basically you can write JavaScript, write HTML, push a button, and wind up with a Objective-C project that compiles into a native application and uses the native graphics layer. We have wrappers, things like PhoneGap, which lets you take an HTML5 app, leverage some native APIs, deploy it as a native application on top of Android, iOS, or Windows Phone 8. And of course, we're starting to see native support. And this is really Windows 8, right? Windows 8 treats HTML5 applications as a first-class citizen. You can write applications specifically for Windows. And I think that's really exciting. So example of PhoneGap application, Untapped, has been really popular. Right now, it's deployed on iOS and Android. I wouldn't be at all shocked to see it show up on Windows Phone 8 now that there is phone gap for Windows Phone 8. And the nice thing about this is they have a single code base, and they can just roll it into new devices as they come out, new platforms as they come out. And this doesn't feel totally native. I mean, when you run this on an iOS, there's some inconsistencies with the native user experience. It doesn't feel quite as smooth as your average iOS application. But it's really good enough. It's great. And it means that these guys can target lots of different platforms with a relatively small team and not have to rebuild and maintain multiple code bases. We built Pirates Love Daisies just about 3 years ago. And when Windows 8 came out, we said, hey, why not turn this into a Windows 8 app and find ways of actually making some money off of it? And so we added in a couple of monetization options. We put in, Microsoft has an advertising model for Windows 8, and so we put in some banner ads, which are actually doing fairly well. And we put in some in-app purchases, so people can play through the original maps that were free online. And then we added some new maps and some new units and stuff like that that you have to pay, I think it's $1.99 or something, to unlock. And so we were able to take this property that we already had and that we weren't making any money off of at all, and with fairly minor work, we updated it, added some new content, added some ads, and are able to generate revenue off of this. And I think that's one of the big advantages of this stack, is that you can repurpose these things across multiple platforms as they become available. So today, 2.4 billion people on the internet, right? And there's like more devices than that. There's actually more than one device per user on the internet. It's about 196 million people using iOS. There's about 345 million people using Android. And there's about 690 million people using Windows. That's people using Windows 7 right now, but all of them, anyone that is using Windows 7 can upgrade to Windows 8. Steve Ballmer said that within a year, Microsoft should have 400 million users on Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8, which would make it the single largest app platform available today, well, available in a year. And that's a ton of potential users. That's really exciting that with one technology, we can hit all of these users. I mean, obviously, there's a ton of overlap. Pretty much all of those internet users, or pretty much all of those iOS, Android, and Windows users are also internet users. But we can hit them where they most want to get hit. If they want to use an app, we can deploy an app. If they want to access your content on the web, we can do that without necessarily having to write multiple applications. So I think we are definitely in a renaissance. To me, it's just really exciting to see how quickly things are changing. It's also really challenging, right? There's all these challenges that come with such a rapid rate of change. It's disrupting our processes. It's disrupting our tooling. It's forcing us to constantly learn new things and constantly tackle new problems. But innovation, you gotta like that. I couldn't figure out what to put as the second title, so. But. There's a problem with forcing a structure on your slides. Innovation leads opportunity, right? Anytime that we see new innovation on a technology platform, we see people finding ways to use it and monetize it. And we've seen a ton of innovation over the last little while. And I think that over the next few years, we're going to see people who really rise to the forefront figuring out how to build cool shit on top of this, right? How to make money on all this innovation. And I'm really excited about this. I think these types of periods are really what separates the wheat from the chaff in the technology world. Who can keep up, who can't? And so I would say, you know, get out there. This is before I knew I could swear. So build some cool shit, right? Have fun with it. Learn new things. Try and figure out where you fit in all of this. And that pretty much wraps me up. So thank you very much, and I will hand on.